paradigm shifters in our planet today. There are all kinds of people that are making huge waves of change in our capacity because of changing the human collective, is the way I understand it. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest with us today who's been paradigm shifting for 50 years. Would you say, Dr. Hunt?
Well, I'm 92 years old, so I guess I've been shifting for 50 years.
Yeah, this is exciting. And Dr. Valerie Hunt has just put out a new book called Uncorking Your Consciousness. And I was just going through the book, and I'm so, I have a million questions for you on how you perceive energy. And I was reading how we run our lives, things impact our energy first and then us. And I'm very interested in how we can change our belief structure so that we can evolve. So why don't you just start talking, because I think you've got all the information I need.
Well, honey, I want to say a couple of things. I'd like to try and clarify some words.
Okay.
That we have in our memory and that tell us how we think and how we behave. And until we change some of these words, because as a paradigm shifter, I have changed the words.
Great.
And I have scientific information to show it. And so the words, I'm going to give you the words, I'm going to talk briefly about them, and then we'll go on with the questions. You got it?
Excellent.
One of them is energy fields. Now, everybody knows in physics that everything is energy, and that anything that occupies space, whether it be living or dead, or something we created like a chair,
mm-hmm,
or a lamp, is made up of atoms. And atoms is the energy source. And these atoms throw out into the environment, and so we're living in an energy environment. Generally, we think of energy as the gas we put in our car or the food we put in our mouth or horsepower or something of this kind. Energy is movement, is force, is action. And I'm particularly concerned about bioenergy, which means our physical energy, our emotional energy, all the energies which we have. And we have talked about this. We talked about physical strength as energy. We talked about personality as energy. But it all comes from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the energy field, which is made up of the atoms inside our body. These are atoms that generate energy. And it comes out of the energy of the universe. We transact with the energy of the universe through the energy field. And our energy field is the thing we call the aura. It radiates from the inside out and from the outside in. And what we take from the physical world or the emotional world or conversation or a beautiful sunset is information coming through that field into the body and being recorded. Are you with me?
Yes, I sure am.
Now, living in dynamic things, rocks have a constant kind of energy field. As soon as you come into animals, they get much more dynamic because they select what they transact with. And plants have better than wood. And so if it's a living thing, it's a dynamic, on and off, continuous change. And so we as human beings have a field that we program. And we program it to save our life, to embellish our life, and to create life. So life is energetic. And without the energy field to transact in the world, there would be no life. Are you with me?
I sure am.
I mean, this is big stuff, isn't it?
If very much so. I just want to know when you said it that they choose what they want to transact.
Now, that comes to the next things.
Okay.
That is, what causes us to choose? Why do we choose what we will transact with and what we won't? Now, some people, for example, love loud noises and big bangs.
Right.
They love it in their music, and that's what they transact with. And some people want soft and beautiful music. Some people like brilliant colors. Some people like soft colors. See, there's a great range of difference in what we like and what we don't like, and we call that individual.
Right.
But here's what it comes from. It comes from what organizes this energy, bioenergy field. It is a thing called emotions. Now, all of us know about emotions because we've had them. Most of us are experts on our emotion, but we don't know much about emotions.
Right.
And emotions are programmed in the brain at birth.
As what?
At birth. Mm. We're programmed with emotion, and this is organized energy that does two things. It saves our life, keeps us away from disturbances, and it embellishes our life, meaning that it makes us happy and sends us to fun things and good things and sometimes bad things that we think are fun. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is there, programmed in.
But when you say programmed to keep us from disturbances, I think of emotions as sometimes liking disturbances.
Well, yes, but I'm talking a little deeper about emotions.
Okay.
I'm talking about the source of them.
Okay.
Also, I'm going to talk about disturbances in a minute. So the source of them is programmed in the brain. But that's just very simple stuff. It's programmed the same for every one of us. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
But we unprogram it and change it by the human mind. And what we experience, if we like it, and it ties in with what we believe and what we've experienced before, we grab it, and that becomes the embellishment of our emotions. So each one of us, starting at the same point, has experiences in utero when we're being created, experiences with birth, experiences throughout our life. You with me?
Mm-hmm, I sure am.
Experiences in past lives, which comes in with the soul. So here's this whole bunch of experiences that we've had in which we alter this energy or force, which we call emotion. Without emotion, honey, there would be no life whatsoever. Got to have a force organizer. You follow me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And from our experiences, we take the best that we think we can take to preserve our life, to get ahead, and to have fun and embellish it. Now, that's where we make some grave errors, because the mind is not in the brain. The mind is in the field. Now, in my book, I go into great detail about this.
Yes, I read that.
But unless you can see the mind in the field, you can't see the dynamicness of how this mind works. So as a result of transacting with the world, using the energy of emotions, the mind is developed and becomes patterned and has its own way of thinking and belief systems. That mind does not, it happens in the field. That mind is in the field, and the field goes into the body, and some of the mind is in the tissue. It's in each cell that has had an experience. And some of it is recorded in the brain with experience. The memory of it is in the field. The total memory is in the field. And there's something we're just learning about. It's called the glial, G-L-I-A-L, cells of the brain. Mm-hmm. That we used to think was padding, because when we did brain waves, it was inactive. We have found that when the person is most dynamically, emotionally involved with the mind, the glial cells are totally active, and the brain cells are quite quiet. You like that?
Mm-hmm, I do, actually. Yeah.
Oh, what is memory? And what is emotions? It's stored in the mind field. And the mind field is in the energy field, radiating out from the body. That's why when you get around some people, you don't have to talk. You feel what's happening in their field. And if you're very sensitive, you can even read their thoughts, because they're hanging out right in that field.
Hmm.
And they record them in the brain, not in the cells that operate and do the movement, but in cells of memory. No cells of memory we're learning are in the padding cells that we have never known what to do. And that comes to the last one, and then I'm going to slow down and you can ask me questions. The last one is, without consciousness, there would be no life. Because consciousness is a metronome. Awareness of things that are happening around us. That consciousness is the result of the development of the mind and how broad it develops and what it's primarily conscious about. Now, some people are only conscious, they're very conscious about the ordinary problems of the world and making a living and being healthy. That's the one that occupies most of our time, and I call it just ordinary consciousness, or I call it ordinary or regular consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us are conscious of things that are under that, and we call them subconscious. Well, they're not subconscious to the mind. They're subconscious to our brain. Are you with me?
Right, okay.
So when I go to a doctor and I have something wrong with me, I go to my doctor and I walk in and I said, I want you to check so-and-so. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I'm having sensations that are so subtle. It's not the pain and it won't work. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we go out sometimes and we sit in the grass and we listen to the sounds around us, most of us don't hear it unless it's a loud noise or an airplane or a siren. You forgot it?
Yes.
Or a bird that's noisy. Can we hear the subtle sounds? And so there's this subtle, which is basic, which most people call sub, which is a part of the consciousness continuum. And then we go from there into what we call superconsciousness. Now, most people think it's sub and altered. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Not sub and altered. It's altered because we don't pay attention to it.
Mm.
But it's right there, and the superconsciousness takes us into those things that are not materially realistic. And that is energy fields of information. And so, we will see a sunset, for example, that will stimulate something emotionally in us. And we have this profound experience, consciousness that is beyond ordinary reality. When we hear a music, we see a baby smiling. We go into a level of awareness of information and things that happen that are not realistically on a material level. And then the one that I like the best, which few of us reach, which I have reached, is called cosmic consciousness. And in cosmic consciousness, you have all the consciousnesses. You have the sensitive. You haven't escaped anything. But you have one that's higher. And that is, the words that we express, we are one with all things, is a philosophy. I wonder how many people have ever experienced the consciousness of we are one with all things. And so in this book, in Uncork Your Consciousness, it's conversational. Did you notice that, Veronica?
Yes, I like that.
It's conversational because I'm talking to you as though you and I are having a social engagement together. You ask me a question, I talk to you. And I tell you all the qualms I had in coming to this. I don't give you just a speech. See, you know, I used to think it this way, and then something happened, and I had to think it this way. Or I started some research, or I read a book that said it was this way, and I thought, they haven't explained it, I have to explain it. So it's conversational, and for the first time, I have put in so much of my own personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
As I've traveled around the world, 60, 70 years, in every continent, in practically every state and country. There's a few I've missed, I think there are 5 or 6, and that's on all continents. And so I share with you the stories of my learning. And some of them are profound when they shook me from my belief systems and brought me to another level. Now, ask me questions.
Well, did you start off being an intuitive, a clairvoyant, or did you learn that along the route?
No, I've written another book, which is not out. It will come out later. It's called Journey of a Scientist to a Mystic. You like that one?
Yeah, I love that.
And I was a little child, and I had sexual attacks. I was not raped, but I had sexual attacks at age 3. And I went into a coma. And at that stage and going into coma, I experienced the consciousness of being with God. And I didn't want to come back. I'd been a bright little kid before that, and I'd been intuitive. But after I came out of that, I was a mystic. And at age 3, nobody wants a little bitty girl who tells them where everything is. And when they say something, they say it's not quite right, but I don't know why it's right. You like that? And so my parents were college educated. Now, that's pretty important back in the early part of the 19th century.
Yes, it was.
I mean, very few of them were both educated.
Were they scientists as
well? My mother was a teacher and my father was an engineer. So I came with good intellectual background genetically, but they couldn't understand this little girl. And so they would say, go out and play. Well, this was my play. I knew about these things. But finally, honey, I couldn't get along in the world because nobody listened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother started teaching me, and I realized that I had a very bright brain. And so I used all that energy that was frustrated to become an intellectual. But I never lost the mystical. That's why I became a college professor. That's why I've written 9 books. But I never got rid of the mystical part. And in the process of my teaching at UCLA, started coming back, and I started doing the research.
Hmm.
Told us about energy fields. So that's why, no, I was a mystic at birth. I had a very traumatic birth. And if you've ever heard a person say they were born in a sack, it's an old mystical concept that the intuitive and the brightest are born in a bag, and I was born in a bag.
Oh, my.
Which is a separate container from the uterus. But it protects, apparently, the little high beings, and I was born in a bag.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I didn't say that in this book, but I said it in another one, which you'll
get later. I've never heard of that, actually, so I'm interested.
Well, some of the people that are here listening to you may have heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
Born in a bag, and this protects the fetus even more than the uterus does, and the fluid of the uterus. Separate bad tank.
So that just brings me back to our purpose, our soul purpose, and our style and so on starts way off before we're born, right? Or shall I say you're programmed already to become the mystic?
Well, it's programmed, but everybody is. Did you hear what I said?
Yes.
Everybody has it. I just had things that brought mine a little foremost. From my lifehoods in the past, I came in with already a pretty educated soul.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have not had quite as educated a soul, but I had trauma in lifehoods. But I never lost the insight. Some people lose it, become nasty and stinking. And for some reason, I didn't lose it.
That's excellent. So I guess my questioning is leading to this. You talked about where the energy fields, the aura comes from and so on. And I guess I'm thinking, how much of our personality is decided and shows up in our energy fields when we're at birth? I mean,
at birth we've got the experiences we've already had.
Right.
Which means the soul had experiences. The soul that enters the fetus is a soul that's already experienced. It's not a pure little soul. Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I did, but also is it its personality?
Well, it carries all the elements of personality. Personality is a pattern of how we think, how we behave. You understand?
Mm-hmm. So it would tell also how we would interact in this early part of our life with
this. Correct. If you watch a baby very carefully, you will see some very quiet little babies. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
These are both male and female little babies. You'll see some that come out screaming and hollering. You'll see the very individual differences from their present experience. Now, they bring that into the world, and they start having more experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those experiences will alter the other. Some of them will exaggerate it. But the personality of the person at any one time is the result of what he has selected from his experiences. because of his emotions, anchor into who he is.
Hmm.
You like that one?
I have to, now you make me think, you see. I have to sit here and chew my pen for a minute.
Go ahead and chew your pencil.
Yeah.
As somebody said who read my book, you know, it's easy reading, and I want to keep going. But when I get through, I'm going to go back, and some of them said I've read it 4 times already, and I'm still getting information.
Yeah.
It is written for you. It's not written to tell you something. It's written for you, James.
Well, one of the things that I'm fascinated by, and it's a wonderful book, and I will read it several more times, I know, but I'm fascinated by what it takes for us to unleash, you could talk to uncork your consciousness, and I'm fascinated by what it takes for us to step out of many structures of belief so we can really be in our creative joyfulness.
Veronica, that's a beautiful question. You see, our beliefs are wings that we have needed to protect us, to make us feel secure, and we have to go back and change our beliefs. Now, intellectually, some beliefs are not very strong. You understand?
Right.
And if we if we hate a certain race of people, and we have experience with that race of people, and it's good, we can start changing our beliefs. You
mm-hmm.
understand?
Mm-hmm.
But with others, they're so emotionally involved.
Or they could be involved with other lives, right?
Yes, they can come from other lives, or they can come from this one plus other lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so deeply embedded that we can't get to why we have these beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk and we can say, well, I believe this because so-and-so and so happened. That isn't truly the answer. So we have to go back to the emotional part of what we believe. Now, in the last chapter, you probably haven't gotten there, but it says, you ask you and contemplate. Now, this is not like saying, I want you to go meditate on this question.
Mm-hmm.
Because meditate means to take the question, go into a higher state of consciousness, and see if you can get the answer. Well, that's fine if you can. That's what I do, but that's more experience. So I say, ask the question, saying, I don't like this emotion anymore. It gets me in trouble. I wonder where it came from. You with me?
Mm-hmm, yes.
So, you don't say it came from here and it came from there, because as soon as you start rationalizing, you got it all screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
People say to me, well, it came from my childhood because my father was an alcoholic. That's halfway right, but not good right. Why did you choose a father that was alcoholic? How did your mother protect you? What did you do with it? You understand?
Yes.
So, I say, ask yourself the question. You ask you, and be very specific. Just say, how did I get this way? And file it. You don't even have to meditate. And sometime later in the day or the next day, ask the same question. And you know, the mind will give up its answer, because the mind's got all the information. And pretty soon, when you're washing dishes or driving or mowing or whatever you do, the information comes popping in your head. So no kidding. Sometimes you say, I remember that. And sometimes you say, it's so real, I have to remember it if it's a past life. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing places I've never seen before. Now, this can be very frightening. But I'm going to tell you how to keep from being frightening.
How?
Recognize, this is the first time this mind has released this level of your consciousness.
Hmm.
And you're not used to it. So file the idea on the shelf. You understand?
Right.
File it on the shelf and say, well, that's interesting. Mind, if there's more information I need, you say contemplate rather than meditate. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because meditation has so many things. We have to have this technique or that technique. Contemplate just says, I wonder.
Hmm.
And the next thing you know, the information will come and that's the wrong answer. So take it off the shelf and throw it away. But if it keeps going in that direction, you keep getting the information that you need to change your beliefs and to change you. Honey, it's profound.
Hmm.
This is the way it should happen, because to say, I got to go to my guru or my psychiatrist, is being a dependency on somebody else when you got all the answers. Isn't that stupid?
But people don't really know how to trust that. Well, anyway, you've just given us wonderful...
I gave you a clue in the whole last chapters. Mm. Gives you questions, all kinds of questions. If you don't have the question, you read through these. I think there are 100 and some odd questions.
Mm.
And they're questions, do you like yourself as a sexual person? If you say, no, I don't like myself. And you say, but I know why I don't like myself, because when I was a little girl... Little girls didn't mean anything. Well, that's secondary. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
You bought it. You bought it. So just put that aside. That's too realistic. And say, why do I not want to do this? Why do I have difficulty here? And you raise the question to the mind, and the mind knows exactly what happened. You understand?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Your mind knows exactly what happened. Now, be a little peaceful about this. It isn't going to happen tomorrow. Once you start this conversation with your mind, consciousness starts a conversation with your mind, how do you even learn anything about yourself?
Hmm.
Anything about yourself. And I still do it. If something comes up and I say, I wonder why I thought this. I put it to my consciousness, and mine's such now that it comes bingo right at me, and I said, no kidding. You're a goof. You understand?
So you're saying if you practice that regularly, it could happen a little more swiftly.
Oh, it happens almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody listening to this show is trying to work on evolving themselves and becoming...
That's correct, honey. Yeah. But your evolution is held by emotions.
Hmm.
The thing that holds you is emotions. Because emotions dictate where the energy is going to go. And if it dictates where it's going to go, you're going to think that way, you're going to behave that way. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And the emotions hold key. Say that you're going to make major changes in your evolution without going to the emotional sources of where you are is a major error. You can live a little better life by good judgment. You can have better food. But honey, when the chips are down, something emergency happens, you go back to the same old thing.
Mm.
You know this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just
people who are, say for example, the people who are always losing weight better go back and ask why they got that weight.
Yeah.
And not that my mother fed me too much at a given time. Why do I do this? Why is this impulsive for me to do it? And they say, well, it protects me. But that's an intellectual thing, you follow?
Mm-hmm, I sure
it protects you from.
Mm-hmm.
It's the emotions behind this thing. And honey, once you get these, you are starting on the path of evolution correctly. Using yourself, you are your guru, you have the strength, you have the security, and you can do it.
Well, tell me this, how much is dictated by the state of our, say, chakras?
Nothing.
Okay, good. That's good to hear.
Well, you like that quick answer?
I loved it, yeah. But I read a section here on the chakras that was quite good. Talking about, I'm trying to flip through the book here. You probably remember it was talking about the discord when you're checking out the chakras and discord. And
well, but what I use the chakras for is the fact is the coherency in the memory and tissue.
Okay.
The only reason I use chakras is because there's more energy there.
Okay.
Did you hear?
Mm-hmm.
It ain't the chakra that's got it. It's the field that has it. Information.
And that's every cell in a way. Hey?
That is every cell in a way. Now, the lower the chakras in the lower part of your body, the frequency is lower.
Okay.
Understand?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lower frequency, more magnetic frequency. And the tendency is that the more primitive emotional feelings are there, but they can go throughout the entire body. You understand?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the higher you go up, the more elevated they are. You come into higher frequencies and lighter colors, and the more you are in the etheric and the spiritual. But it is not the chakra, it is the field.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Because people go say, well, if I change my chakra, no. If you change you, your chakra will change.
So how do we change you?
I'm telling you.
Go in and ask why you're like this.
I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
If you wish to change you, and you wish to evolve. And, you know, I think this is marvelous, Veronica, because as far as I'm concerned, reason we come into the world is to evolve.
Right.
And if this is our concept, then why do we evolve? Well, we evolve first for personal reasons, and that is, this is our highest capacity. We're going to keep coming back until we get to that evolutionary state. And the other thing is, when we evolve, we give to the world so much more than we can ever give to the world if we don't evolve. Now, people who come to me and say, I have this social welfare, I got to give to people. So give to yourself until you have so much it spills over and you have to give to people.
Mm.
And there you give it for a different motive.
When you talk about the field then goes, adds to the collective with a higher resonance, doesn't it?
Well, the field is what we first communicate with. Right? And if we get people that are communicating on that level, we change hurricanes. We bring changes in countries. You follow?
Yes.
And we have to resonate on that level, but we have to do it first for ourselves. Did you hear what I said?
I did indeed.
Not for the world out there, because then it is an escape.
Well,
we do it for us, so we reach that evolutionary stage, and the more we get there, the more we give it away.
Hmm. What about types of people? Not that I'm trying to corral everyone, but I was reading, you were talking about the regular person and the bipolar.
Well, I'm saying that this is a way of some words so you can understand, okay?
Okay.
And I used certain kinds of words to describe certain people.
Mm-hmm.
I said the macho, remember?
Yep. Macho.
Macho person is a secure person. It runs around and they have a lot of ego and they have a lot of kundalini energy and they have a lot of force and they have a lot of vitality. And frequently they're either, they can be athletes, they can be judges, they can be forceful people, they can be boogers too.
Mm-hmm.
If they use it in a way in which is detrimental. But this is their primary thing, the overwhelmers, okay? And then the regular people, I'm saying, are the ones that don't have much of anything. And then there's the inspirational people. You follow?
Yeah.
And these are the ones of a little higher consciousness that take us to another form. And certainly in our politics today, we see inspiration. And people love it. It isn't so much what they say, it's the inspiration they say it with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we have these people on various levels. And see which one you gravitate to. Which one really makes you feel secure? If it's Big Daddy and Big Strength, and that's in our politics too. I'm not using names. You can use them as you wish. But
you're not going to tell us what you're going to vote for, huh?
It says, yeah, who do you vote for? Why do you vote for these people?
Mm.
Well, they make me feel secure.
Hmm.
They make you feel secure where you are in your insecurity. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't necessarily rational at all. It's irrational. And it's emotional. And so I will not discuss politics with anybody. Because it's too emotional, irrational. And somebody says, well, I like so-and-so. And I say, why? And they tell me, and I said, that's not the reason. I'm not going to discuss it with you.
People love that, don't they?
Well, they like me because I'm so outgoing and because of... You know, I don't have any axe to grind.
Well, one of the things I was asking about when I said the types of people are, for example, if we're going to, we want to evolve so much, we want to move past all these things, do we move out of these types? Do we, how much of it's written? Are we in categories or what?
Well, there's such a thing as... If we stay put in the same environment, with the same group of people, doing the same kind of things, you're saying, that's where I want to be. If you dare to venture, did you hear what I said?
Yes, if you dare to venture.
If you dare to venture. I didn't say go out and smoke pot or get drunk. If you dare to venture on those things that you don't really understand, maybe you ought to know some about it. These are the people that are going to get in different fields, and they're going to be stimulated in different ways. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one of the things I can't stand is going to conferences.
Why is that?
Well, because everybody in there is a seeker. People come, otherwise they'd stay home and read and do their own seeking. You understand?
Right.
So they're seekers, and they want to get told. There's a high level of dependency, and I don't like the vibrations because they're anti-coherent. When I get in these places with these high seekers and these urgent energy people, I want to get out of there because they're all over me. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I can give the speech, and then I give the speech, and I run. I run because I don't like the energy field. Now, you see what the energy field is you're living with that's comfortable to you.
Mm-hmm.
And do you dare to get into one that's less comfortable?
No, because it takes so much recovery time.
Why should you have to recover? Go into a field that's very different from yours and experience it. See if it stimulates you, if it doesn't stimulate you. Give the people to think in a different way. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens to you. You need, let me tell you what you need. Consciousness is dynamic consciousness. The ability to experience on all levels. And then to make a selection of what you really want.
Mm.
And by this, you change your field. If there are a bunch of boogers you're with, and they're nasty people, your field creates a barrier. And they don't bother you. They don't bother you at all. I'll give you a little story. I think it's in the book. Where I was going down into the West Indies, where there's a lot of black voodoo, and I went. My internist said, don't go. And the psychiatrist said, Valerie, you're going to get in trouble. And I said, why? He ain't going to touch me. I'm going down there to see if I can find out some information. So I went down, and although I wasn't happy with the vibrations I experienced, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do anything to me because I didn't transact with him. If you transact with something, then you're permeable. Now, if you get with higher consciousness people and you transact, only for you.
So tell me about how not to transact, because...
Well, you can't not transact except emotionally.
So if you're empathic, I mean, a lot of people are empathic. I see that all the time. I feel that all the time.
All people are what?
Empathic.
Empathy, yes.
Yeah.
Or are they empathetic? It goes and it stabilizes and helps them with what they want to be empathic about. They can be empathic in the worst things, but they need that empathy. Do you follow?
Right.
They don't need to say, hey, that's not for me. It's for you, but it's not for me. So I'm not going to transact with it.
So you're saying that...
It has to do with the emotional part.
Pardon me?
It's the emotional part that makes you so empathetic that you'll put up with anything. I don't put up with anything.
Were you always like that?
Most of my life, yes. In other words, if somebody comes and they say something to me, and I'll say, you know, I don't believe that. It's okay for you to believe it, but I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to participate. Don't try to act nice and sweet and empathetic. Maybe they got a big problem, and it's all right to be empathetic to understand the problem, but don't be the problem.
Right.
Got it?
Uh-huh.
So many people be the problem. There's a problem. They need to be humbleized and problemized. And so they be the problem. And these are the people, honey, who are not easily answered. Why have I got this? Do I like this? The answer is, of course I do. It's the easiest way I can do things according to my mind.
So if you ask somebody if they like it.
Well, they'll say, well, yes, I'm empathetic to it. No, do you really like it? You like to be around these. You like to hear them. You don't like to hear them? You don't have to hear them.
And so that's where
if it's one of your family and you keep hearing it, you keep saying to them, why do you keep doing that?
Mm-hmm.
You see, what they do is poor dear, poor sweet dear. And that just keeps the person right where they are. I don't keep them where they are. I ask them, you like that kind of behavior? Is that comfortable? They say, well, it's me. And I said, well, if you like it and it's comfortable, then just stay there. You were not really very frank, Veronica, are we? Are we very frank? We say, you know, frankness loses friends. It doesn't if we love people. we can be frank and not hostile.
I guess that's true. That's true. Well, you're better at it than I am so far.
Well, I'm a lot older than you are, sweetie. I have much more time to work on it. How's that?
That's right. Well, you have some pretty good cognitive, you have ways of explaining things that really make sense.
I'm a teacher, sweetie.
Yeah, you do.
Teacher and a researcher.
Great job. What's the cultural movements? And you mentioned that there's a way in which, for example, you mentioned the Japanese and Africans, and I read the whole thing.
These are patterns that they have.
Yeah.
Ways of handling things. And I use an example of the sexual mores of my childhood and my young adulthood. Very different than the ones from today.
That's for sure.
Now, I'm not a moralist, and I don't draw pictures here. I'm saying the ones of rebellion and restriction that were of my life, early life, was not appropriate. We became so repressed, and I'm not saying that these are currently are appropriate, but they change. Culture changes when things don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the young people say, it's no good. I'm not going to do it that way. So we are our culture, and if we don't like our culture, we either get out of it or change it.
Mm-hmm.
And each culture has its own belief systems, and the people who are the changers are the ones that sneak in and change it by tapping in to the part of us which is not compatible. We put up with it so long, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
We think it's right, and here comes some fresh soul with inside that says, did you ever look at that, what we're doing? Why do we have to do it that way? And that brings in, you follow the
like
question.
Like the emperor's
saying,
new clothes.
My culture isn't necessarily right, it's just me.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to finish this other thought, too. I mean, that's very interesting, actually. The cultural movements, I thought, well, I just want to finish that thought, that people collectively actually move a certain way, which can explain like a collective belief system, would you say?
Well, yeah. If they believe a certain way, it's either going to get stronger that way, or if they believe another way, it's going to change the system. You with me?
Mm-hmm. I do. I am.
In other words, if they believe it so strongly, the whole group of them, and they keep bringing people in and bringing people in, it's going to stay where it is. It's going to get stronger. If, on the other hand, there are other people that say that's not right, and we get a group, it is the field itself with its belief systems will change. It's not just the belief. It's the field, which is information, which sends it to all people.
So let's change and talk about the media, because we're talking about our own personal little
media. Well, let's do talk about the media.
Did you say no, let's not?
I say, let's do.
Okay.
Let's do talk about the media.
Do you think...
Well, the media is, number one, emotional, sensational.
Mm-hmm.
They think, well, this will keep people looking because we got something that's immediate and sensational, and there are a bunch of things around the world that are sensational. And they keep beating the drum about these sensational things. The thing that bothers me the most is then they bring in the experts. Got it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The experts talk about these things. And when I listen to these experts, I sit there and say, I know exactly what's on your mind, and it's stupid. Got it? Stupid. So I can critique the experts. I said, I don't care what you know. This is an emotional thing on your part. It is not factual. It is not actual. And it's not good.
And you know that from intuitive, or do you just know that because you're darn smart?
I know that because I am evolved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as we become evolved, we will see, now some people, remember, it's based upon your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You will like the guy that does what you want to have done.
Mm-hmm.
You got it?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the shouter and screamer and the preacher that bangs on the table, and he's the one that gives me spirituality. There's a soft-spoken one that never says nothing, and that gives me spirituality. Well, neither one of them are correct, you understand?
Yeah.
You need the full range of human awareness to understand and be able to reach spirituality with power and with insight and have this profound experience of things are bigger than me, that I can experience them, I can know them, and it is a part of me. You follow?
Yes, I do.
Well, I want people to be more critical of what they hear on television, because they're critical now in their own neurotic pattern.
Mm-hmm.
As they grow, they will become critical. I sit down many times, and I write the critique. I'm going to be putting more on my website.
Okay.
Write the critique of the people, the famous people that are heard on the website, on the TV. Because, you see, I don't care what they think I think. You understand?
Yes.
I don't care. And I've watched some of the famous ones, and I'm saying, well, that's your limitation right there.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you like this kind of expression. Look, listen to all kinds. Listen to all kinds of expressions about it. And there are a few, there's some people on television that have that breadth. Can give you all sides of the question, and then can ask the question so that you pick something different than you would have picked.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's imposing upon the minds of young people?
What, the television?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Media in general.
Well, the answer is yes. It's imposing. But young people are more critical sometimes than the old folks. And sometimes the young people know better. They don't have the strength yet to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope in this election that the biggest amount of people that come out are young people.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because young people have to come out and have visions. And when they wait for old crocs to tell them what they do and what's right, they must start their own thinking process. Now, if they get the wrong person, they're going to have to learn from that. Do you understand?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We get the wrong person all the time because we aren't thinking. You understand?
Yep, I do understand.
And if we're thinking, we're saying, whoops, I made a mistake that time, but I won't make it again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
All right, well, so now we're unfortunately having to close, but I would like you to talk about your website and what's coming up in this wonderful...
Yes, I will, sweetheart. I have a website called bioenergyfield.org. It's not commercial. It is a not-for-profit. I'm bringing in a brand-new aura meter, which is second to none. There's none like it in the world.
Okay.
I had to get a Nagra SJ recorder because I wasn't able to record the energy field, which is like a whisper compared to a voice. You get the difference? It's so small, it's in microvoltage, that it's like a whisper, and ordinary recorders don't record it.
Hmm.
So this last recorder was finished, the one I used at the university. They stopped making it in 1966. Are you ready for that?
No.
I haven't been able to get it since then. So I finally found somebody who told me about the Nagra SJ. He picked it up on website. It was crit and beat up. They went to the Nagra company in Switzerland, and they brought in the heads, and they redid it, and I used it today.
Oh, wow. This is good.
This is what I'll be doing. I'll be starting in September, October at the outside, and you can watch my website because I will be putting the information on the website. I'm doing two things, honey. I'm trying to get to the source, the very source of disease and malfunctioning health. Now, there are all kinds of truths. There's a truth if you use energy fields correctly, personally, you can change disease phenomenon based upon its diagnosis of a disease. You understand?
Yes.
You can cure the symptoms of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You can cure the symptoms of all kinds of things by using the mind or by some instruments. And that's true. That doesn't mean you've cured the cause. You understand?
Yes.
And then you can come a little farther, and some things work on another level. They work on a level which has to do with minutiae in the physiology, such as the protein that handles memory, and such as the lining of all cells, are piezoelectric, meaning that's where the energy field goes. It doesn't go away by way of nerves. It comes in the acupuncture spots. It goes to connective tissue. Mm. And you realize that all connective tissue is around everything. You would have no structure, no cells, no bones, no organs without a connective tissue. Mm. That's the thing around it that holds it together. And that is electrical. Mm. Operates with this little energy field that goes to every single cell, every place. And so then you come to a level which has to do with the genes. We said, well, but the real problem is the genes. So all the genetic stuff, and we're trying to do stem cell work and everything to get rid of these diseases, because if we get the right stem cell, we'll overcome it. I'm going to say to you, this is the wrong approach.
Okay.
Now, the right approach is, let's find out. We know that every disease is caused by stress. Are you with me?
Yes, I sure am.
Some kind of stress. And we have all the stressors. We say I'm emotional stress, and I have physical stress because my wife doesn't like me, and she stresses me. Or I have metabolic stress because I eat the wrong thing or I drink too much booze. But the answer, there is a stressor that we are now finding, and that stress is a lack of oxygen.
Aha.
Lack of oxygen. Our bodies don't get enough oxygen. Now, how come they don't get enough oxygen? The reason they don't get enough oxygen is, number one, we're becoming more insecure. We don't exercise as much. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we don't stimulate the thing to get more oxygen. And the second thing is that we don't have enough oxygen in the bloodstream to provide oxygen to every place. And when some part of the body doesn't get enough oxygen, it has a cycle called nitric oxide cycle that comes in nitrogen and oxygen and causes dilation of those blood vessels.
Hmm.
So the blood vessels dilate, supposing this is your kidney. And for some reason, that kidney ain't got enough oxygen. And the blood vessels will come in there and dilate to bring more oxygen to the kidney. You with it?
Yep.
Or if you break your leg, same thing happens in the leg. You understand?
Yes.
Or if you get a bacteria, same thing happens with the bacteria. And so you dilate in order to get the blood vessels there. And next thing you know, if there isn't enough oxygen in the bloodstream, honey, you keep dilating everything.
Hmm.
So pretty soon, this stimulates the brain to bring in inflammation.
Hmm.
The inflammation is the cause of all disease.
And I'm afraid we have to end this because they're going to hook us off stage.
All right, I'm going to say one last thing.
Please.
That is, we have found the source, and it is embedded viruses.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Embedded viruses that you can't get out anyway except by a certain kind of treatment called humane oxygen. It's done in Mexico. In a few places of the world, I have learned how to do it. I'll be taking the energy field. I'll be working with cancer people. I'll be working with cardiac people. And I think we're going to eliminate the original stress.
How exciting.
So that then you can come into handling the other stresses, because the other stresses won't work if you can't get oxygen.
Wow.
And that will be reported on my research.
And will it be on your website?
Yes.
Excellent, bioenergyfield.org. And Dr. Hunt has been a wonderful guest. I'd just love to talk to you again. I hope that will be possible.
It will be possible, Veronica. I always like talking to your group.
Thank you very much, and many blessings to you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, honey.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. And next week's paradigm shifter is Galexis, who's a channel being coming through Ginger Metro. I'm really excited about her as well, and I have a lot to think about with Dr. Hunt's visit, and I hope you do, too. Let me know what you've learned, what you'd like to learn, Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. That's Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. I love your feedback. I want to say thanks to those of you who write to me and tell me what you learned and what you'd like to ask, and we'll talk to you. I'll be on Thursday night with Jackie Salvitti at 8 o'clock on Thursday night, and I'd like to talk to you next Tuesday on Radiance by Design at 4 p.m. West Coast time, and 5 p.m. is Galexis on Paradigm Shifters, and I send you much love, many blessings, and thank you so much for listening. Remember, take some love and pass it on.